Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are new to our show, welcome home. This is the place to be if you are leaving corporate to start your own business as a coach, consultant, or servicepreneur. You will learn the most critical mistakes to avoid when launching your business and what steps to take and in what order to stand out in your market and easily build a multiple six-figure business. And today we are tackling one of the most critical skills you need to get right from the start, and that is public speaking. It's one thing to be a whiz at direct marketing and learn all the things about getting your digital brand out there. But when you first start out, you need to get known. You need to carve out a space that you can own, and your ability to speak, to connect with, and garner the attention of your ideal audience is a critical skill. And today, I have an incredibly accomplished guest to introduce you to. Joya Das has been a business news anchor for the last 20 years, delivering live hourly reports from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange for Bloomberg, CNN, ABC, CBS, and New York One News. Now, that all changed in 2012 when Joya started a side hustle, which became her full-time business 2 years ago, and we'll be sharing more about that in this dynamic conversation today. She is the founder of Women's Leadership Academy and Lady Drinks, which is a community of South Asian women leaders who are carving out a new path to success. And I met Joya in the New York entrepreneurial space a few years ago. We both belong to Luminary in New York City, which is a community of women leaders and entrepreneurs who are making a positive impact on women's equality. And today we get an inside view of what not to do when speaking to audiences and how to avoid habits that might actually damage your brand. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Joya.
Oh my gosh, Deb, I feel like we met a million years ago. The pandemic has a way of making people feel that way. And so I'm really glad to be reconnecting you with you on this modality today.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And before we dive into our topic today, I would love our listeners to get to know you a bit. You have had an amazing career. And I went to your website and read about how you single-handedly worked your way through college and grad school and landed an envious spot on major news networks. Why would you ever leave?
Well, I think my personal story is important to insert here because that gives you context. I am of Indian origin. My parents are immigrants. And there's a real tight script for Indian women and how the trajectory of their life is supposed to go. And that mainly is you succeed at home, you get married, you have children, so on and so forth. And I don't think that's dissimilar to many cultures, but that was the only culture I knew growing up as an American kid in Pennsylvania. And when I articulated to my parents that at a very young age, I wanted to be a TV anchor, this was just beyond anything they knew. And so they couldn't get behind it emotionally and they couldn't get behind it financially. So I've been this way since I was a little kid. I was not going to live my life on anybody else's terms but mine. So I left at 18 and I paid for college by myself. I paid for grad school by myself. I paid for every move around the country to come to New York and live out my dream of becoming a TV anchor. And if you knew me personally, you know that when I want something, I am a heat-seeking missile. That's how people describe me. And so it's not about, you know, if I'm going to get it, it's when I'm going to get it. And so I came to New York very intentionally, you know, crafted this career. And that was a good solid, you know, 15, 20 years of the narrative that I led, which was morning TV up at 2:30, into work by 3:30, on the air by 5. Now, why that piece is important is that morning news is a, it, it's a, it's a drive. You know, it truly is. You are just showing up and you're just getting it out there and getting it out there, but you rarely get to stop and make things really beautiful. And so when my contract came up with Channel 7, ABC here in New York, I was like, I really wanted to launch a documentary production company because I wanted to take time to revise and I wanted to take time to tell longer stories that were beautiful. I wanted to be on my deathbed and be able to say, I did this. This was my body of work. As a side hustle, that truly started to take root. And I was hosting monthly meetups to build a pipeline of projects for us to work on. I had a business partner at the time. Her name was Greta. And what I didn't realize when we started hosting those first events in July of 2012 is how many lives I had impacted from the other side of the television camera. And 300 Indian women started showing up to those initial events, and I was overwhelmed. And then I was like, okay, I'm clearly in a place of responsibility, whether I like it or not. I had access. I was interviewing either the opening or closing bell CEO every single day on the stock exchange floor. What if I took that dynamic and moved it in front of this audience that was either on the precipice of starting a business, pivoting away from the parent-approved professions, and really just finding their way? And so what if I, you know, on a weekly basis started to interview people that could help them shape that path? And so that was, you know, July 2012 was the first event. I ran Lady Drinks on the side while I was still on the air doing those obnoxious early morning hours and then hosting events in the evening. And it just became apparent over the course of 7 years that I was spending all of my free time putting on events. Events give me so much joy that it was just time to stop doing two things half-assed and do one thing well. And truly, I think anything that is going to flourish and be successful needs your focus. Focus trumps talent any day. So it was just time for me to jump off the proverbial ledge, leave the paycheck behind, and give this my full attention. So 2 years ago, I left television to do this full time. But here's another piece that I'm going to layer on top of all of that. A lot of people will say to me, well, don't you miss journalism? You just asked me that question. Don't I miss it? Why would I leave? You know, when you're part of a big machine like CNN or a big machine like Bloomberg, there are people sitting in ivory towers making decisions about you as the talent. And so, for example, if I found or had a relationship with a Misty Copeland, I wasn't necessarily going to be the on-air talent to interview Misty Copeland. But now, because I have my own business, I own the entire ecosystem. So if I do book Misty Copeland, which I did 3 years ago, I interview Misty Copeland in front of this audience. And so I really haven't left journalism. I'm doing journalism on my own terms. And I think that that's something that gives me immense joy.
That's a beautiful context for the listeners too, because when we make this shift to entrepreneurship, it's not that we're throwing the past behind and everything that we've done up until this point becomes irrelevant. It becomes super relevant. It just becomes a new focus. So you're taking the talents that you have and you're focusing them and applying them in a new direction. And something that has heart for you, that has deep meaning, and that's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a curious sort. I think it's something that drove my father crazy because I was always asking why. But I think that that's what makes me a formidable interviewer today, is that I'm forever, you know, asking questions because I'm naturally curious.
Yeah, naturally curious. And you and I share that determination of, you know, wanting to be in control. I felt the same way when I left Gartner and I was there really gun for hire when it came to launching new services. And I just burnt out in that environment, but took my launch skills and decided to launch myself and then help other women launch themselves. And I want to get to our topic at hand today because public speaking is the currency of business. Mm. So when you are a coach or a consultant, it's actually the easiest way to enhance your personal brand and get your messages out to your audiences. And most people dread it. Few people actually do it well. So how can our listeners learn from your experience on what not to do when speaking from the stage or from Zoom or even podcasts like this one?
I mean, I believe that communication and public speaking is one of the top leadership skills. If you're a new leader and you need your team to buy into your vision, you've got to be able to articulate that. If you're raising funding for your company, you've got to be able to pitch to investors and give them your why. I now, as an entrepreneur, have to sell every day. And it's so important for me to be able to very quickly, concisely, and cogently explain what my business does and why I'm standing in front of you, what brought me to your doorstep. So I think communication is so, so, so important. So I have some tips here of things, because I'm now in a position of coaching other women on their public speaking. I now have a masterclass. I work with women one-on-one. I didn't start out advertising this, by the way. People just started coming to me and asking me for this training because it was very much in my wheelhouse. So the number one thing that I think about when I'm coaching women is that desire to use filler words, the ums, the ahs, the likes. You see, we as humans are so uncomfortable with the silence that we have to fill them. And sometimes our brain is going so fast, we're actually talking much, much faster, and we're just spurting out a bunch of stuff that isn't necessarily a value add to your audience. In fact, what it is doing is dinging your audience's confidence in you, because when you're saying and ah and like, it really starts to detract from your message. So my number one problem that I see with women is using filler words when you lose your train of thought. And my solution to that, I believe in, you know, always having tactical advice to buttress a problem, is that you've got to be able to learn to leverage the silence. If you find your thoughts going off track, just pause. Believe it or not, in this day and age, when we are just oversaturated with stimuli, that silence can be disarming. It's going to force your audience to really sit up and listen. It'll take a bit of practice, but if you can start to leverage the silence, that can start to whittle away at your desire or need to use filler words.
Before we go on to number two, do you feel like we've gotten sloppy because of social media, and that we're going live in Instagram stories, Instagram reels? And do you think that that's okay, or there's an opportunity to be more intentional even with the casual communications?
Good question. I think that ivory tower that I speak of, back when communications was really controlled by, like, let's say, three networks, there was limited space for talent to really be those communicators. And now all of those tools, all of those channels by which we communicate have come down to a consumer level. So what does that mean? That means everybody can be communicating, but not everybody has been trained. So is it acceptable? No, because our attention spans, guess what, have also gotten smaller. So for me, if I'm listening to somebody just rambling around before they get into their IG Live, I'll flip off inside of 3 seconds. Our attention span since 2012 has gone from 7 seconds to 2 seconds. So if you aren't, you know, getting right down to business in those first 2 seconds, you also have not only availed yourself of a bigger audience, but you can lose an audience very quickly. So casual or not, you can be in a t-shirt and shorts, but I think that you really have to get down to it. And that comes from just building that self-awareness muscle, looking at yourself on tape, and investing in getting some training if that is important to you.
That, I think, is a great plug for your speaker training that's coming up soon. So what are some of the other pitfalls that new speakers fall into?
Well, not reading your audience. That's a big one. I'll give you an example of what that means. So yes, I did business news on television for 20 years, but my audience has changed. The same information that I would be sharing with a very sophisticated investor that's watching a Bloomberg television is not the same kind of information I'm going to transmit to somebody who is watching Good Morning America. Because that is a mom getting their kids ready for school, and I am white noise in the background. That mom may have Kellogg's in her portfolio, but she just wants to know if the stock is up or down. She wants to know if she's making money or losing money. She doesn't want to know about the 200-day moving average. She doesn't want to know about the 52-week high or low. She doesn't want to know about forward guidance. She just wants to know if her stock portfolio is doing fine. So I think it was really important for me, sometimes even in the same hour, to always be making sure I was speaking to the audience that I was delivering to. And I don't think that that changes for you as an entrepreneur or changes for you as a business person. You've got to be able to read your audience. And one of the hacks or one of the solutions that I'm going to provide to that is that anytime I'm doing a live speaking engagement, I always ask the organizer if I can pre-interview six people that are going to be in the audience, because that makes me very nervous to just walk in and give a canned talk without really speaking to the pain points of those folks that are going to be in my audience. I want to make sure that I'm giving the same talk, but I've tailored it to you. So it's really just, I can't speak enough to being able to read your audience. And as you become a more seasoned speaker, it becomes more important for you to read the audience in real time and toggle in real time. But you can do so much preparatory work going into it. And it can be a fatal flaw if you don't read your audience. I remember Christine McCray, who was the First Lady of New York, giving a mental health speech at a Diwali function that they were hosting at Gracie Mansion. She gave it three times. The three times that I've been at Gracie Mansion, she gave a mental health speech. And I was like, did somebody hand her the wrong speech? Does she not know that this is a Diwali celebration? This has nothing to do with mental health. So I think that that's like a grave example of someone who did not read her audience.
That's a great tip. And I love your example of interviewing members of the audience. One thing that I do is usually send out an assessment so that I can understand where people are on a spectrum of understanding and where their skills are. So that's a great tip as well. I never thought of interviewing. I like that idea.
Yeah.
What about organizing your talk? What are some of the mistakes people make when they're preparing for their presentation?
You know, I've worked with now 10 private clients one-on-one. I've hosted 4 masterclasses. Most women come to those sessions thinking that it's about the elocution. Public speaking is about the diction. It's about the words that are coming out of your mouth. And once you get into it, once we're workshopping a talk, it really comes down to the way you organize your content. And more often than not, a bad talk is just badly organized. So I always encourage my students and even myself today, if I'm going to give a talk, I want to write it all out. It's like taking your purse and dumping it all out on a table so you can find your keys. You need to be able to see everything in order to find the critical piece that you need to extract from it. So I always say you start with your takeaway first. If the world was ending and you had 10 words to leave the audience with, what would you want your audience to most know? So you start with your takeaway. What are they going to be thinking about long after you have left the room and they have left the room? And then you reverse engineer from there. You want to think about what you're going to promise the audience at the outset, and then think about storytelling. I think that storytelling gets short shrift, but Amazon is one of the biggest beacons of sharing new ideas by virtue of sharing a narrative. You've got to be able to tell a personal story in order to be able to captivate your audience and the folks in the room. So I always encourage my students to think of a personal story in order to be able to illustrate an abstract thought. I just did it a second ago when I told you about reading your audience and Christine McCray giving a talk about mental health to an Indian celebration of good over evil. You know, so I think that that better illustrates what I'm talking about than me just saying, hey, organize your content into a beginning, middle, and end.
So important. And we're like sisters from another mister. I organize everything. In fact, every single podcast episode is written out. I take great care in the emails and telling stories. And it's really such an important skill because of that attention span. Like you mentioned before, whether you're writing an email or you're speaking in front of an audience, you have to captivate. And storytelling is a very powerful thing to do there. So I love that. You mentioned before silence, and that is such an awkward moment for many people, whether they lose their train of thought or they freeze when they're up on stage. So talk to us a little bit more about the skill of leveraging silence.
One of my favorite examples to cite, and I'm going into another story here again, but you know, silence in sales, and I've had to become such a formidable salesperson in the last year, couple of years, is when you have given the other party all of the information. This is my product. This is my service. This is how it works. This is how much it costs. This is how it's going to go. then you have to go silent. Because again, human beings don't love silence. It makes them very uncomfortable. Like the next time you're in a room with somebody, you stay silent to see how people like wiggle in their chairs. But in sales, after you've given the other party all of the information, you've got to go silent. Because the first person who's going to break that silence probably loses. and it better not be you if you're the person that's selling the product or the service. So I just think that there are tactics and strategies around silence. But when it comes to public speaking, as I said earlier, we live in such an overstimulated culture now that when you do go into silence, it really wakes people up. But really what it is doing for you is helping you to pause, look at your notes again, gather your thoughts, and start again. And I don't think that we should be afraid of that. And I just see people like lose their train of thought, and then it just becomes a train wreck because they're talking, or they're panicking. And listen, we're all human. Everybody screws up. It is okay to say, you know what, I'm going to take a minute to gather my thoughts. Give me a second. And then come back.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, we do use a lot of filler air time, and we could have a whole nother podcast episode about the sales conversation, because that's so potent and so true, and how you, a sales conversation is really asking powerful questions and not talking and letting the other people, other person do most of the talking. So the powerful pause, and I think it also enables your audience to digest the information and think about how they will apply it to themselves. So I think it's important to include those moments of silence and processing. And 100% on the one key takeaway of your talk, I call it the big idea or the core premise. And it's something that you should really work on, because you want your talk to be memorable. We're consuming, I don't know any statistics on this, Joya, but we must be processing, I think it's something like 73,000 thoughts a day. So if we think of how much we hear, how much we read, how much of that is actually memorable? So if you want to make an impact with your audience, what you're saying needs to have an impact on them. And that, I think, connects with everything else that you've said today. Reading your audience, writing out your content, telling relevant stories, having a big takeaway of your talk, and then leveraging those moments of silence either to connect with yourself and reset, or allow your audience to process what you've already shared. Mm-hmm. So these are fabulous tips, Joya. And I know we have just scratched the surface on all that you offer your clients in this area. Where can our listeners find out more about you and how to get involved in some of your trainings?
Well, I can be found on social media at Joya Das with two S's, not one, J-O-Y-A-D-A-S-S. That is my handle on Twitter. That is my handle on Facebook. That is my handle on Instagram. And I am launching my next cohort of a public speaking masterclass on September 29th. It is by request and by demand, because we are all on Zoom for maybe a little while longer. And the way people are communicating is through screens. And so more and more women are just asking me on how they can show up more powerfully. They realize they're not getting the in-office FaceTime. And so they need to be able to be powerful and compelling through a screen. And I'm really just teaching you how to tell stories about your leadership and your wins. And so you can build that personal brand that you're so eager to build, to be able to be on a podcast, to be able to be on a panel, to make the case to your boss that you deserve that meaty project or that promotion. So I really, really love teaching this class. I love the container it creates for the 6 weeks that all the women are in it. You are going to present in every class. Your peers are going to give you feedback, because I think you learn by teaching. And it's going to be a really fun time. I really work to make it fun. So those are all the wonderful ways that you can interact with me. I also have a women's leadership platform that really is the original business. It's called Lady Drinks, and you can always look at that at ladydrinks.com or at joyadas.com.
Thank you, Joya. This has been great fun. I always enjoy spending time with you and sharing tips and stories. So get out there, my friends, be seen and heard, and be sure to make it memorable. And that's it for now for Life After Corporate. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.